Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
It's the fourth day of action at the World Championships in Athletics in London. Medals will be awarded in the men's 110-meter hurdles and three women's events, the hammer throw, the triple jump, and the 1500 meters race. In the men's 110-meter hurdles, one of the medal favorites is Olympic champion Aries Merritt of the United States, who set the world record of 12.80 seconds 5 years ago in Brussels, Belgium. Speaking after the qualifying rounds on Sunday, Merritt had this to say.
You know, it felt great. I ran two solid rounds today. There was a major gap in between the rounds, which is not favorable for any of us athletes. And that was the first time in my career that I've ever had to wait almost 8 hours in between a round. Because it's never been like that in the past. But, you know, everyone had to deal with that, so that's just something that we had to overcome this championship. But I feel great to be able to come back after my kidney transplant and be on the world stage.
Two long-distance runners from Kenya were on the world stage Sunday in London, where they won world titles in the men's and women's marathons. Picking up the story, here's reporter Samson Omale.
The highlight of Sunday's lineup was a gold medal won by Kenya's Geoffrey Kipkuri Kirui in the men's world marathon, making up for his country's podium no-show in the last two championships. Kirui, this season's Boston Marathon winner, clocked 2 hours, 8 minutes, 27 seconds.
I was very happy. Yeah, I was more prepared because you have to train somewhere in because of the heat work that you are running. When you are in 38K, you know, maybe the legs will be very tight to move. But then Tola tried to go. I leave him.
In the women's category, Bahrain's Rose Chilimo claimed gold in a dramatic manner to deny Edna Kiplagat's mission of becoming the first athlete to win 3 marathon world titles as she settled for silver. The 28-year-old Chilimo, a Kenyan-born athlete who qualified to compete for Bahrain last August, finished in 2 hours, 27 minutes, 11 seconds after resisting what looked like a decisive break from her 37-year-old Kenyan rival, Edna Kiplagat.
I tried so hard, I worked so hard, and the last 2 kilometers was too long for me, and it was slightly uphill, so I think I was a little bit tired.
On Saturday night, South African Luvo Mayunga won gold in a men's long jump with a leap of 8.48 meters.
Yeah, it's been a great year, but when I was starting the competition, I felt so much pressure. I've been leading the whole year, so people will expect more from me. And I did it the way I wanted to happen.
Ahead of his event tomorrow night, the world and Olympic champion South African Wayne van Niekerk admits the only person he fears is himself. Even though he sailed through his 400-meter semifinal at the World Athletics Championship in London on Sunday night, winning in 44.22 seconds, he knows the task ahead of doubling up with the 200 meters is a massive one.
The 200 tomorrow,
yeah.
And then the 400 final. I am giving myself a tough time, I would lie to you. There's so much doubt, but at the same time, so much belief. So it's like a good and evil fight in my mind, but I'll pull through, I always do.
I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Heading into Monday's events at the World Championships in London, the United States topped the medals table with 8 medals, 2 gold, 4 silver, and 2 bronze. The gold came in the men's and women's 100-meter dashes as Justin Gatlin and Tory Bowie upset the gold medal favorites from Jamaica, both reigning Olympic champions. Gatlin clocked 9.92 seconds to win gold in the men's final. Fellow American Christian Coleman got the silver in 9.94 seconds, while pre-race favorite Usain Bolt in his final 100-meter race won the bronze in 9.95 seconds. Bolt says Gatlin deserved to win the gold.
He's well-deserved, you know what I mean? I've said it over the years that he's a great competitor, you know what I mean? If you don't show up on the night, he will beat you, you know what I mean? And for me, I didn't show up tonight. My start was horrifying, as always, and it's surprising. Shorter runs, I always get better, but I didn't, so just one of those things.
Usain Bolt received the royal treatment from newly crowned world champion Justin Gatlin, who knelt on the track and then bowed to the Jamaican star.
Class act, man. He's got a guy that he changed the sport. He could command anything he wants, and he just wanted the best for the sport. And I just wanted to push him to be the best he can be, and I've said it throughout the years. And him and his coach has always said to me, congratulations, good luck. He always said that when he races against me, he has to bring his A game. And I'm happy for him, all he's done for the sport, and I'm thankful for him.
Meanwhile, some of Usain Bolt's many fans in his home country of Jamaica gathered in the capital, Kingston, to watch the retiring superstar in his final 100-meter race. Among those on hand was Jamaica's Prime Minister, Andrew Holness.
I mean, everybody is disappointed. We all wanted to see Usain win in his final race before retiring, especially in the 100 meters sprint race. But as I said before, what he has managed to accomplish in his career is superhuman. But at the end of the day, Usain Bolt is a human being. And we love him. We admire all that he has done. He has been a source of inspiration. And he ought to be praised. And we in Jamaica love Usain Bolt. The world loves Usain Bolt. And you could hear the commentators at the stadium pay their respect to a great sportsman who, because of him, the entire sporting fraternity has been elevated. So, you know, we are happy, but at the same time, it's a little bit of sadness not to see him win. But we still praise him.
Still praise the man. Praise from Kingston, Jamaica. That's Andrew Holness, Jamaica's Prime Minister. In the women's 100-meter dash final in London, American Tory Bowie leaned over the line for the gold medal to edge Ivory Coast sprinter Marie-José Talou. Bowie clocked 10.85 seconds, while Talou had a personal best of 10.86 seconds to get the silver. Daphne Schippers of the Netherlands won the bronze in 10.96 seconds, while 2016 Olympic champion Elaine Thompson of Jamaica finished a disappointing fifth. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. tennis news now on The Voice of America. Alexander Zverev of Germany and Katerina Makarova of Russia won the men's and women's singles titles at the City Open Hardcourt Tournament here in Washington. The 20-year-old Zverev beat South Africa's Kevin Anderson in straight sets 6-4 and 6-4, needing only 69 minutes to win his fourth title of the year. For her part, Makarova rallied to defeat Germany's Julia Georges in three sets. The final score from the Rock Creek Park Tennis Center here in Washington, 3-6, 7-6, and 6-love. My VOA colleague, Andrew Palcheski, caught up with Kevin Anderson before the men's final. And Andrew asked Kevin, do you see yourself as an ambassador for African tennis and South African tennis?
Yeah, definitely. Firstly, South Africa, which is obviously where I'm from, and then globally also, in Africa too. I mean, obviously we face a lot of tough challenges, throughout the continent, especially when it comes to tennis and. Just costs so much, and with exchange rates and stuff, it's sometimes very difficult to get to the tennis scene in Europe, where guys can just get on trains very cheaply and exposed to so much tennis. So tennis in Africa is more difficult with that. So I think my biggest hope is young kids watching me playing on the court can see that. Well, I always want them to know that I was in the same position as them, as a kid watching, Wayne Ferreira specifically. He was always top 10 when I was growing up, and hopefully I can give them confidence and inspiration that it's a very tough journey, but if they work hard and believe in themselves, at least they'll give themselves the best shot. So yeah, I definitely feel that way. This year I'm the ambassador for tennis for Africa. We had a great meeting in Rome this year. We had a couple of kids come up, and they're busy training at a fantastic academy in Italy. And what a great opportunity for them. And hopefully, not only do they learn a lot, but hopefully they can go back home and share their experience.
About your physicality, you've been recovering from injury. You've been trying to get back. But I want to talk about the mental aspect of that. How do you keep your mental acuity? How do you keep your spirits up when you're dealing with the physical? And how do you keep your mental level up when you have these two tough matches, rain delays yesterday, three set matches, the heat today? How do you keep that level in your head?
Yeah, I mean, as you said, the last, not so much the last, five months, but definitely last in the beginning of this year, it was tough. I was sort of stopping and starting quite a bit with injuries, and I had to miss the beginning of this year, which was very difficult. Skipping Australia is one of my favorite times of the year, but my body's been healthy and it's felt good for quite a while. But it's not just getting the body back for competition; it's getting the mind back for competition too. And when you've been out for a while, a couple subtleties that you kind of miss out on, it's impossible to recreate in the gym or on the practice court. You have to be out there on the court competing, and that was a bit of an adjustment for me. That took me a little bit of time. In the beginning of this year, when I started playing again, and the first of the U.S. series leading up to Indian Wells in Miami, I was practicing great. My body felt great. Just wasn't able to really convert and play the kind of tennis I wanted to on the match court. And I think that started to turn for me during the clay court season, started getting more matches under my belt. I was able to have pretty good results at French and Wimbledon, and obviously off to a good start here in this US summer swing. So it's a lot of work, but I feel a lot of confidence in my game. Obviously you have to maintain the health, because if you're not healthy, things become very difficult. But each match is a great opportunity to go out there and incorporate everything that I've been working on.
There's been a lot of talk this year about the quote-unquote older players. Not that old, really, in their early to mid-30s. Somebody who's in his 30s, do you take inspiration from that?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely in the last while. Everybody's, it's quite noticeable that a lot of guys are playing and, well into their 30s, and not only playing, doing incredibly well. You have to look much further than Federer at 35, 36, and what a year he's had. So, I think 10 years ago, 15 years ago, when guys got to 30, kind of looked like they were sort of passing their prime. And I think that whole image has definitely shifted a lot. know, there's a lot of guys in their 30s playing some of their best tennis in their career, and I actually feel the same way. I feel like, you know, as long as I can keep my body healthy, all the experiences that I've had, you know, I feel, you know, my best tennis, you know, can still be in front of me. So that's really exciting. Just the biggest challenge is staying healthy, but you know, we spend a lot of time really focusing on that, and that's a big and that's a big priority.
One of the other focuses off the court has been social media. I know that you and your wife Kelsey have run the Real Life Tennis website, yep. And you're very active on Twitter, Instagram. How does that influence your play on the court, connecting with the fans digitally and hearing from them?
Yeah, I mean, as you said, that was actually a bit of a different experience for me. You know, when I was out just through injuries for a little while, you know, quite a bit of downtime. And, you know, one of the ideas is, you know, we came up with was, you know, Real Life Tennis, which is, we thought, a great way just to share a lot of the lessons and experiences I've learned and try to share it with everybody and just show them, you know, kind of the stuff I do, you know, which I think can, you know, benefit anybody of, you know, from any level. So, you know, that was, you know, something cool for us to do. Now that I'm back in the swing of things, you know, it's great seeing, you know, supporting and interacting with, you know, the fans. Without the fans, you know, our sport's not going to, you know, survive at all. And it's not just the fans, it's also the kids who, you know, hopefully come here and, you know, choose tennis as their sport. So hopefully we continue to, you know, to grow the game.
Finally, what does the rest of the hard court season look like in the U.S. for you? And what does the rest of the year look like? What are you hoping?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is, you know, I feel like I'm on a great path right now. It's something I've worked really hard to, you know, to get on. So for me, my primary focus is that, is each time I go onto the court, you know, really playing the kind of tennis that I want to be playing. And I know if I can do that, you know, I think I'm going to give myself the best chance of having, you know, good results. A big goal of mine is to get back into the top 10. I was there just for a brief amount of time, and then, you know, unfortunately got, you know, plagued with a few injuries. So that's, you know, a big ranking goal of mine. Obviously, you know, winning tournaments, that's always, you know, a huge goal. I've not won, you know, 500 or Masters, obviously, or a Grand Slam yet. So there's a few opportunities coming up. So I just, you know, take a day at a time. And, you know, if I do that, you know, I think I'm going to be in the running for some good results.
That's South African tennis player Kevin Anderson, who lost to Germany's Alexander Zverev in the men's singles final at the City Open tournament here in Washington. And Kevin Anderson was talking with my VOA colleague, Andrew Palcheski. And Andrew joins us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Good to have you back here in the studio.
Welcome back. I guess for me, a nice job with the hosting last week.
Thank you very much. It was, you know, big shoes to fill because you're a very tall guy, but also you you do such a great job here as host. But I think I kept the show afloat. I hope so. But it's good to have you back.
We heard in your conversation with Kevin Anderson, Andrew, how he's hoping for some good results the remainder of 2017. I think this DC tournament was a good result for him.
Definitely. And you could see that even in the presser after the match. He seemed very positive. I said there were a lot of big takeaways. Even though he lost in the final, he's back on track, he feels like, physically and mentally, to make a good run up the rankings and hopefully get back into that top 10. Just from the City Open, he went into the week at number 45. He comes out today at number 31 in the world, so jumping up about 14 spots just by getting to the final at the City Open. And now off to Montreal with just about every other men's tennis player who's in good health up there for that mandatory tournament up there at the Rogers Cup. So we'll see how far Kevin Anderson can go, but he is looking positive and he is feeling like he's in a good position.
This young German 20-year-old Alexander Zverev, maybe the next big star in tennis, Andrew?
Yeah, he's been one of these players that they call next gen. There's, I guess, the generation that's the Federers, the Nadals, the Murrays, the guys who are in their late 20s, early 30s. And then there's this new crop of 19, 20, 21-year-olds. Alexander Zverev is only 20 years old. He's already won, I think this is his fourth tournament that he's won this year alone. There's been a lot of talk about him being a potential world number one someday, winning multiple Grand Slam titles. So he is definitely a player to watch. He's got a lot of growing still yet to do. He's really pretty skinny guy. In fact, he talked about in the ceremony after the match that his physical trainers have helped him put on about 20 pounds of muscle in the past year or so. So he's got a long way to go, but he's already doing quite well for himself, and he's definitely a name to watch and remember, Alexander Zverev.
Our producer this evening, Bill Werkinger, was courtside at the City Open, and Bill was telling me that Zverev also captured the eye of more than a few ladies out there in Rock Creek Park.
Yes, he's, you know, we were talking briefly in the press room about his hair. He's got a very flowing kind of blonde hair. He's a good-looking young man. You know, and certainly being young, I think he's one of these young stars that's attracting a lot of attention, not just for his tennis, but for his looks, I think, a little bit as well. But somebody who's very down to earth talked about in that ceremony about his mom being there with his dog and thanked her for walking his dog when he couldn't because he was on the court. So seemed to be very down to earth. Interesting, though, he said that he does not use social media. So that I thought was very interesting kind of nugget of information, that as much as we see the sports stars connected to their fans, Kevin Anderson being one of them we talked about, heard about in that interview, Alexander Zverev has not embraced that. So very interesting.
Andrew, you also had a chance to chat with Donald Dell, one of the founders of the City Open. Do you get the sense this tournament is growing?
Definitely, definitely. Mr. Dell, I think, would like to see it continue to grow. This year was a banner year for the City Open, one of the strongest player fields on the men's side. I think the next thing that they want to work on is building up the women's side. The women's tournament at the City Open is only 5 or 6 years old. The men's tournament has been going on for the best 48, 49 years. So to try to build up the women's side of it and really make it a top-notch co-ed tournament. Right now, it's one of the biggest U.S. tournaments for men, and I think they want to get there for women. But I think it's only going to grow from here if the past 5 decades are any indication.
What else is trending in the sports world on this Monday, Andrew?
Well, the other big sports story in the world is the IAAF World Championships and some very surprising results in the 100-meter races. Justin Gatlin beating Usain Bolt and getting some boos when he won there from the crowd. People wanted to see Bolt win in his final run before he retires, but unfortunately, that wasn't meant to be for him. So mixed reaction to that on social media. Some saying that booing was disrespectful. Others saying Bolt deserved to win. He is the champion, the record holder. But many praising the very nice moment between Gatlin and Bolt after the race. Gatlin kind of bowed down to Usain Bolt, said it was an amazing display of sportsmanship. And just praise for Usain Bolt across the internet, saying that he's still the fastest man on earth no matter what. One of the greatest sprinters ever. And not just one of the greatest sprinters and one of the greatest in athletics, but one of the greatest athletes ever, period, getting a lot of praise for that. And then, Sonny, I saw this phrase and I knew I had to mention it on the show because I know you would like this. Bolt the goat.
Bolt the goat.
Bolt the goat. They said that he is the greatest of all time in the sport, certainly 100 meters. His record shows that. So they're saying no matter what happened in this last race, he has staked his claim.
I think there was mutual respect from both Justin Gatlin and Usain Bolt on the track. Women's also had a surprise winner, Tori Bowie. She upset an Olympic champion from Jamaica, Elaine Thompson. I guess Tori might be trending.
She is. Won by a lean, they said. She leaned forward and won by 1/100 of a second, 0.01 seconds. Quite amazing. Amazing athleticism that she was able to grind it out there at that very end. Anytime we see one of these close results like this, it always gets a lot of social media attention just because it's so close. But this was amazing from Tori Bowie. And unfortunate for Elaine Thompson that she only comes in fifth, despite the fact that she was the fastest qualifier, that she's the Olympic champion. But on any given day, as we say in sports, any given day, anybody can beat anybody else. And it was Tori Bowie's day over the weekend.
And we'll have more coverage of the World Athletics Championships in London all this week right here on the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks, Andrew. Andrew Palcheski.
Thank you very much, Sonny. It's good to have you back.
And we'll also have maybe some more City Open coverage. I know the tournament's over, but we might have a few little nuggets later this week.
I think we will, for sure.
And that wraps up the August 7th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Dan Crafton. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. And that's the sunny side of sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States has partnered with the United Nations Foundation's Girl Up campaign, Intel Corporation, Google, and other partners to lead the third annual Women in Science Girls STEAM Camp to enable girls to study the science, technology, engineering, arts and design, and mathematics fields. This year's two-week camp is taking place in Malawi, following a 2016 camp in Peru and a 2015 camp in Rwanda. Almost 100 high school girls from six African countries, Malawi, Rwanda, Uganda, Liberia, Tanzania, Zambia, and from the United States, have convened for a two-week program to increase their skills in the STEAM fields. In addition, the program is designed to increase the campers' leadership skills and networking opportunities. The curriculum includes coding, app development, engineering, robotics, micro and molecular biology, and satellite mapping. Throughout the duration of the camp, the girls will share their diverse, multicultural experiences and perspectives, forming friendships and connections that will help them to develop both personally and professionally. It was my first time seeing a diverse group of girls who barely knew each other, empowering each other, not because they are best friends, but because they realize they have one common feature. They are all girls and want each other to be successful, wrote a young counselor from the 2015 Rwanda camp. The U.S. Department of State created the program to empower women and girls in the STEAM fields, help overcome the gender imbalance in those fields, and to prevent and respond to gender-based violence. The Department of State believes that education of women and girls, including expanding opportunities in science and technology, can help create a safer, more prosperous, and secure world by promoting economic growth and enabling women to drive innovation. During this time of rapid technological development, providing women and girls with access to high-tech resources, like-minded peers, impactful business connections, and inspiring mentors will empower young women to enter the STEAM fields. Women in both developing and developed countries represent tremendous promise for economic growth and prosperity, President Donald Trump recently said at a women's entrepreneurship finance event in Hamburg, Germany. When more women participate in the workforce, the world economy will grow, and millions of people will be lifted out of poverty. Empowering women is a core value that binds us together.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African Music Mix on The Voice of America. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. From the north to the south and from the east to the west, the African Music Mix plays only the best. Yes, sir. Two-Face.
NATO C. Hey. Tune in at 200, 300, 1200, and 1300 UTC GMT. Every day, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali,
host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth review and discussion on the electoral process and results of the presidential elections in Rwanda and Kenya. Election fever in East Africa. On the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.